Good afternoon and welcome to the National Center for Health and Public Housing's webinar on best practices on board recruitment. I am happy to facilitate a conversation today with two wonderful individuals who are public housing primary care grantees. Our first speaker today is Allison Dubois, who is the Chief Operating Officer of Hudson River Healthcare. And our second speaker today is Jimmy Lacey, who's the Chief Executive Officer of Birmingham Healthcare. My name is David Vincent, and I'm a consultant with the National Center. So I would love to take a few moments to welcome Allison and Jimmy, and then also give them a few seconds to introduce themselves and tell us a little bit more about who they are and their agency, and maybe a little bit more about the agency that they work with. Allison, do you want to start us off?
Sure. I'm again Allison Dubois. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Hudson River Healthcare. We are a network of 29 health centers in New York, and we cover an 11-county region of the state in the Hudson Valley and into Long Island. We are federal grantees, both community 330 grantees as well as public housing, homeless, and migrant health grantees, as well as Ryan White. We do have two programs that receive public housing dollars. We are in our 40th year. We're actually celebrating our 40th anniversary this year, which is a really exciting time for us as an organization. Thank you. And so we've had a period of substantial growth over the last few years, and we now have an annual operating budget of about $105 million with about 800 staff.
That's wonderful. Well, congratulations. Jimmy, will you tell us a little bit more about Birmingham?
Okay. Birmingham Healthcare right now is in a state of flux, and I'll explain that a little bit more. The organization started out as a homeless healthcare organization back in 1983. In 1998, 99, I think that's when we got our first public housing grant. We used to sit across from the largest public housing development in the state. We have, five clinics. We have, we serve a four-county service area, but we only have a facility in one county at this time. When I say we're in a state of flux, we've been under federal investigation based on the conduct of some prior employees, three of whom have been indicted by the federal government because of misappropriation of funds. That's the former CEO, the former CFO, and the former comptroller. And as a result of that and all the negative press, I recommended to the board that we change our name, that we redo our website, and do a corporate reimaging. So I'm in the process right now of engaging some various, getting quotes from various media consultants to help us undergo that change. Last year we served close to 16,000 patients, for over about maybe 40,000 patient visits for the year. So we're looking to, right now, we're looking to move into another location because the building we're in now is owned by the one of the people who's on the indictment. And we're just looking to just break clean and just start anew. And in conjunction with the city of Birmingham, we just found out that one of the old county health department buildings is they plan on letting us have that in exchange for us moving into their community, hopefully to spur some economic redevelopment around the area because of the traffic that we would bring to that area. We have about close to 85 employees, 11 providers. And we've just consolidated one clinic into our main corporate office, and we're looking to move out of here hopefully between now and September. So that's basically where we are right now.
Well, that's definitely a very a good topic, time to be talking about boards, because the board must have been
What an opportunity for board leadership and all of that.
Exactly.
Yes, because they have all testified before the grand jury.
I bet. So Jimmy. Jimmy, you bring an interesting perspective into this conversation because you were a former board member. Can you tell us a little bit more about the board, what the board looks like right now, today, you know, in Birmingham.
Okay, the board is a 9-member board. Of course, all volunteer. We have one Hispanic member on the board, one Caucasian on the board, and the rest are African Americans. We have a member on the board who is a who is the executive director of a housing authority.
Okay.
I've known him for about 20, 24, 25 years. As a matter of fact, I gave him his first job when I was at the housing authority. So he brings a good perspective to the board from a public housing point of view. I also have the budget analyst for the city of Birmingham. He serves as the treasurer of the board, so those are the professional background. And I have a young lady on the board who is a former, she has a legal background, but she's never practiced law, but she does have a law degree. So, and she used to work for an agency like the Community Action Agency. It's called the Jefferson County Commission on Economic Opportunity, the JCCEL. So she brings a community perspective from there. We also have a board member who has a background in public housing. She was a public housing manager for about 32, 33 years. So that's from another public housing perspective. I have a member on the board who's, two members on the board, rather, who are formerly homeless. One has since bought a house and has is working on her degree. I think she should be finishing up in August with her BA degree.
Good for her.
And we have a Hispanic gentleman who just came on the board maybe about 6 months ago. So we've got people who have knowledge about public housing and about health care. Our former board chair was a former supervisor of nursing for the county health department. She just recently resigned from the board. And we also have a gentleman on the board who's works a lot, and he's an associate pastor at a lost church. And he has taken up the homeless cause, so we're dealing with a lot of homeless issues, a lot of other issues. So the board is a good mix. And they take their job and their role very seriously after this last little episode that we've gone through.
That's really great. Do you have committees on your board? How many committees do you have? And what type?
We've got executive committee, finance committee, personnel committee, long-range planning committee, quality assurance committee, nominating committee, and bylaws committee. Those are the committees.
Okay. Do you guys have term limits within your board? Or what are you thinking?
We do now. As a matter of fact, when HUD did a, not HUD, when NAC did it wasn't a site visit, it was a technical assistance visit back in September. They looked at our bylaws and gave us some a template for how to revise our bylaws.
Okay.
And our bylaws now have term limits.
Okay. Great.
They now have term limits, yes.
Do you guys have Do you have an annual give or get in as part of a board commitment?
One of the things we're planning right now is an annual board meeting retreat, so to speak, where we'll also be doing the taking a look at the strategic plan. Basically going to be an all-day kind of thing, I think like 9 to 4, where we're going to talk about some board training and about the updating our strategic plan.
Yeah.
So we hope to have that within the next couple of months. We're trying to work with our PCA to see if they'll be willing to, they have the capacity to do the board training and the strategic planning piece. If so, we'll use our PCA for that.
Oh, great. Good. So when you think about, like, the culture of your board, I'm assuming that right now the culture of your board is trying to find stability. Is that a fair assessment, or what do you think the culture is right now?
I think the culture right now is to be more proactive in making sure that, one, that the minutes are complete and that they're thorough. Okay, that's the first step, because prior to that, the minutes were not being kept. I mean, a lot of information was being left out of the minutes for whatever reason. So now, instead of minutes being 2 or 3 pages, they can be sometimes 7 and 8 pages a minute. But we believe in full transparency. This is where the board chairman is taking it and said, listen, we have nothing to hide, full transparency. We want to make sure everything that we're, I mean, they're taking the role very, very seriously. And they have a set date for the committee meetings. When the board can't meet, of course, the executive committee swings in place. one of the things we do as far as policies, so that every policy, you know, HRSA requires that every policy be reviewed at least annually.
Right.
So in order to do that, every month there's a set of policies to be reviewed this month by the board and approved the following month by the board, and then there's also a meeting where they're approving policies and deferring the approval of the policy that will review to the next board meeting. So every board meeting, the board will be reviewing and approving policies.
Okay.
Not the same policy the same day. Okay.
Yeah.
You review this month, you approve the following month. Okay. So that's what they're doing. So
that's really good.
Keep them on track and make sure that all of our policies are up to date, that they've been reviewed by the board, the appropriate committees before it goes to the board, because the appropriate committee, like personnel committee, there may be some changes to the personnel policy.
Yeah.
The personnel committee would meet, review those changes with the HR director. That committee would make a recommendation to the board for review. And then the following meeting, they'll recommend approval.
That's real. Good, good, good. Allison, can you tell us a little bit more about your current board and what it looks like, who your members are, committees, and stuff like that?
Sure. So we currently have a board of 18. We've actually gone through over the last couple of years a little bit of a reduction. We were at 21. Those board members represent, you know, a pretty wide geography, though we have been able to ensure that the makeup of the board represents our patient mix by race and ethnicity in a pretty closely. So that's been a real commitment of ours is we enter new communities, we really want to, you know, make sure we maintain that appropriate representation. In addition, we have special populations representatives for all of the federal funding that we receive. So that board, as I said, it includes of the folks that are there, 11 are users of the health center services. So we're really, committed to ensuring that as many of our board members become and maintain their status as patients within the health centers so that they can really provide that valuable perspective. In terms of our board structure, we certainly do have a number of committees, including a very active finance committee, quality improvement committee, compliance committee, an HR personnel committee, a bylaws committee, and then we have a community engagement committee that's really looking at innovative strategies and programming to engage the community. So utilize that board committee structure quite substantially in order to continue to do all the work of the board and to make recommendations to the larger board structure. You you had asked about term limits. We had a recent review of our bylaws, and while there is a recommendation from HRSA to have term limits, it's not a requirement, and so we've actually not instituted that. We really believe that there's a lot of value in some of the longevity of our members, and in fact, we've had some members on the board for a number of years, at nearing 35. So we recognize longevity on the board and the contributions in innovative ways as a way to encourage folks to continue to participate and remain engaged in all that we do.
That's great. Can you tell us a little bit more about the reduction? So what was behind going from 21 to 19?
So that's a lot of people.
Yeah, it is a lot of people.
So, the HRSA requirements, are 9, I believe. And we, again, to ensure really robust participation and that we are able to continue to be responsive, since the responsibilities of the board are so significant, that there was a recommendation that by making slow incremental reductions in the number of board members, that we were able to make sure we had the most engaged folks who were, and that we became a little more nimble by being a little bit more manageable in size.
Great. Can you tell us a little bit about culture? What's the culture like today in your board at Hudson River?
Sure. You know, the culture is really, I think we're really proud of the culture of the board. It's been one of real inclusivity. The board has been very supportive of the and leading the efforts to respond to community need, not just in the existing communities or historic communities that we served, but really responding to other communities in our service area who are in need of healthcare services. And so it's been one that is, you know, very forward thinking in terms of, again, recognizing the value of size and in some of the healthcare landscape changes that we're facing in New York with significant hospital consolidation and with you know, some of the other market pressures that, you know, the size our current organization serves 109,000 patients, you know, that provides an opportunity for us to participate in and help guide discussions about service delivery in our area, and have really been very supportive of that. And they have a philosophy of ensuring that as we continue to add new branches, that we always water the roots. And so, you know, both thinking about growth and thinking about new opportunities, but ensuring that the base and the trunk is strong. So, you know, commitments to continue to invest in staff and in the infrastructure of the organization to accomplish everything that they set out to do.
So when you're thinking about making your trunk stronger, mm-hmm. and you want to build your board, how do you, when you're thinking about recruiting for board members, what do you tend to look for? And
so our nominee
the board,
yeah.
and is there senior management or executive management involved in the process, or how does that happen?
So we have a nominating committee. That's a wonderful committee. I didn't mention that as the list of one that we had, but we certainly do have one. And that committee is supported by our executive vice president, the Reverend Jeanette Phillips, who has been was one of the founding women who helped to found the original health center. And so, you know, her role in supporting that committee has been really helpful as a balance of organizational perspective and board perspective about how to continue to ensure that the board is representative of the community, includes individuals, you know, really with a mission focus, who are connected to what we're doing, and really bring the skills and the commitment to making a board, you know, to accepting a board membership role. So it's really been a very nice relationship between the board members themselves, you know, participating and reviewing applications for board membership, and the role of Reverend Jeanette Phillips in terms of helping to cultivate individuals to submit those applications as we add new communities, as we develop new partnerships. And so, you know, it really is a give and take between those two components.
So when she's looking up, she's at the looking at the landscape for potential board members or helping that discussion. Is she looking for skills, networks? Like, what do you think she's looking for? What's the thing?
Yes and yes and yes. So she's looking at all of those things, because, you know, I think all of those things are important. You know, we really we want to be sure that, you know, that we've got a good representation on demographics. We want to make sure we have a good representation on geography. We really do want to have, you know, strong expertise from the finance, from local government, from healthcare colleagues. And so, you know, she and Ann, our CEO, and others of us on our executive leadership have conversations about how to ensure that we are, you know, really ensuring the representation of our board. On occasion, we have had special populations representatives who've had to retire from the board, they've moved, or other opportunities have made it difficult for them to continue active participation. And so, you know, that becomes a priority. We need to be sure that we have, you know, met our regulatory requirements in terms of representation. And sometimes, you know, a board seat is available, and so it's a priority. We've, you know, have lost or had a retirement of someone with a business background. And so, you know, again, just balancing all those factors. And I think, you know, that's the art of board making.
Yeah. So if there were, and Jimmy, I'm going to come right to you just in a second to ask the same question. So when you think about your board, who are you missing? Like, if there were one person or with a certain characteristic, what do you think what do you think you would add if you were given, like, you know, one wish from the governance there?
And so this is the question we ask ourselves, you know. Yeah, we ask ourselves this sometimes with providers. You know, this is a figment person who is connected to, you know, who's bilingual, who is, you know, from an area in the northern part of our service area, because geographically we don't have as many folks up there. It's more rural. This person is a clinician, because right now we don't currently have a clinician, but who, you know, also has a mind for finance. So, you know, that's kind of the if you could create that person, send them our way.
Thank you so much. Now, Jimmy, so just sort of to go back a tiny bit, when you think about recruitment, so, you know, Birmingham's gone through so much transition over the last number of years. When you're thinking about building your board, what are you looking for right now? What are you looking for?
Okay, from a consumer perspective, what we've done, we've set up what we call a patient advisory committee.
Mm-hmm.
We hand all of our patients, when they check out a card that says, help us to improve our services to you,
mm-hmm.
You know, become a member of the patient advisory committee, which meets once a month. We serve refreshments. And that is the committee from which we recruit our consumer board members.
Okay.
And they recommend it for membership to the board based on their participation on the consumer. Mm-hmm. On the patient advisory committee. And they somewhat serve as our secret shoppers, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
They visit our facilities, you know, as patients, and they come back and tell us what their experience is like, so we'll know, you know, what we need to improve.
Yeah.
I participate in that committee. My outreach and education person participates in that committee, as well as my home and services director. They all participate in that committee. And like I said, that's where we get our That's how we fill out consumer board members on the board.
Okay. What about your general board, your governing board? How do you recruit for that?
Well, again, we have a nominating committee and board members mm-hmm. who have knowledge of the community. They would recommend persons. And what that process is, they would give us, as a matter of fact, I got a resume on my desk right now, because mm-hmm. I just found out this morning that my special population person, the Hispanic gentleman, has to resign because of some family issues that's going to cause him to have to relocate to another city. So we'll go to the patient advisory committee to see, you know, to get someone to be recommended for membership. Now, as far as the regular governing board, I look at somebody who has a finance background.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who has a business background, which is a couple of board members are on the board. I would like to have somebody with some banking experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, banks come in handy when you're trying to grow. And somebody who has some community-based experience, who knows the community, knows, you know, what makes the community tick, so to speak. So that's what we look for. And that's what the nominating committee looks for.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who has some, you know, has ties to the community, either from a business perspective, financial perspective, community, activist mm-hmm. perspective. So, and so far it's worked well.
So when you think about them, that magical fairy who's going to give you the perfect board member, is it the board member who has banking experience, or is there a different type of board member that's really the perfect board member that you would be thrilled to get on your board?
Well, I'm looking at the makeup of the board now.
Yeah.
I think one board member who's been on there since the inception of this community health center, and that's the treasurer, who is the budget analyst for the city.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's there. I've got my public housing executive director who brings that housing experience. I've got a board member who has a legal background, so they have that legal experience. I have another person who's a community activist and a neighborhood leader. So for me, I think I got the perfect board right.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
Turn to what I need. You turn to what I need, okay?
Yeah.
And what I see the board needs.
You know, so many health centers struggle with diversity and really finding, you know, they tend to be, you know, the stereotype is that you get an all-white male board, and people really want to figure out how to make sure that their boards are much more representative of the communities they serve. If you had some tips of advice for CEOs, what type of advice would you give them on how to make a diverse board? What do you think? Allison, what do you think? Jimmy, you can go first. Jimmy, what do you think?
Well, one of the things that I've noticed from other community health centers, and I'm not saying, I'm saying this from both a board member perspective and a CEO perspective. I've seen with some, and I've had conversations with people. I remember my early days as a CEO, I was got a little ticked off from the conversation because I heard the CEO say that he handpicked his board members. Okay? Mm. And I thought that was rather offensive. You know, how do you handpick your bosses? How do you do that? And the conversation was basically along the lines of basically protect his contract. He wanted yes people on the board. And there were some other CEOs sitting around who was agreeing with him on that. And I found it rather offensive. I never forgot that.
Hmm.
And which is why I think board members need to go through a rigorous process in terms of selecting board members.
Yeah.
And that's why the Patient Advisory Committee has served us well. Because we get people there who are committed, who are dedicated, who don't mind telling you what's wrong and what needs to be improved, as opposed to someone who's just going to go along with everything the CEO recommends and say.
Yeah.
We have healthy discussion around every subject.
Great.
People disagree, people don't agree, but at least it's a healthy discussion. And to me, handpicking a board member is rather offensive to me. That's just my personal.
Okay. Allison, when you think about diversity and how you guys build a diverse board, do you have any tips of advice for a CEO or a board of directors?
You know, I think that we really are committed to the patient component of that. And so, you know, we really want to be sure that the board represents the patients. And you know, our communities are really diverse. And so we have often asked staff for recommendations of patients, you know, who've been long time coming and, you know, who are really eager to make recommendations. And again, you know, those folks are encouraged to submit applications to our nominating committee. We often reach out to our partners, particularly if we're entering into a new community, oftentimes through partnerships with pastoral associations, with housing action councils, with the, you know, public housing advisory board structure within those communities. You know, we really have been able to work with local stakeholders and reach out to congregations and individuals throughout the community who might identify folks who are terrific healthcare advocates.
Yeah.
Some of our communities have healthcare kind of advisory councils that municipalities have organized or support. Yonkers, for example, is a larger city, and there was a housing council that was meeting. You know, folks who clearly have a passion for healthcare, you know, those folks have been really helpful. And then we really look to our nominating committee to, you know, to balance those applications with making sure that the board is representative of our patients. And so since right now, you know, about 35% of our patients, you know, identify as English as a second language, you know, or of Hispanic origin, and, you know, and about 25% of our patients identify as African American. They really look at those demographics as well as gender, you know, making sure we've got good representation, and then looking at the submissions and the applications to the nominating committee to help identify, you know, folks who are the best possible fit.
Ooh, great. Great. Do you guys do a board evaluation of like a formal or an informal? What do you guys do? Because, you know, I think a lot of places sort of struggle with that process.
Yeah. For a long time, we used the same one because we wanted to sort of see performance over time. But actually, in the last year, we did an update of it. It's not, you know, wholly different. There's a lot of the same questions, but we added some additional ones, which, you know, really is a self-assessment of the board where they identify, you know, their comfort level on key topic areas. You know, we were we really looked to colleagues in the health center world. We got some recommendations from the National Center for Farm Worker Health about some best practice tools for board evaluation, and put together a conglomeration of questions that we really felt would help the board create their work plan. So we did just have a two-day retreat for the board members, and they used the survey actually as a result, and the results of that to help develop, you know, the action plan for the board and their priorities for training and areas of development over the next 2 years. We do that retreat every 2 years as a way of, you know, pulling folks out of the day-to-day to do our strategic plan review, to evaluate progress and identify new priorities, do some more intensive learning on topics like, you know, value-based contracting, things that are happening in the healthcare environment that are hard to cover in the structure of a normal board meeting.
Yeah.
And then, you know, to evaluate their board self-assessment and to come up with some ideas and strategies about how to work on areas of weakness.
That's really great. That's really great. Thank you for sharing that. Jimmy, do you guys do anything on board assessment yet?
Yes. We have a every new board member is given a new board member orientation package.
Okay.
Which has a list of the committees, has a list of the duties, has a list of the duties and responsibilities, has information about finance, board responsibility, and there's one other. The operation aspects of what they will be governing. And there's also a self-assessment that each board member does annually. We just started this last year.
Wonderful.
Okay, so this would be, this year would be there at the annual retreat would be where they would do the self-assessment again.
Great.
Okay, the annual self-assessment.
We just
implemented that last year.
Did you develop it yourself, or did you use a template from somewhere?
Well, used a template from someplace else. Right. I think my secretary, my compliance officer, went online and found
some
self-assessment tools for board members, and that's what we used.
Perfect, perfect. I may be calling you both to get copies of that because
okay.
I think boards sort of struggle with that issue about finding a tool to use that would be applicable. So, Jimmy, you spoke a little about training and about orientation for new board members. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you guys do for training of current board members and then current and then as well as new board members? What it
well,
looks like.
We started by telling them the history of the organization, what our role, what the mission statement is. And we take one or two of the facilities. First, we were pretty close by, I guess, within about maybe a 10-mile radius. So we could do that. There's a lot of facilities in about an hour. So just briefly. And we sit down. We used to have a video that we would show, but some type of way it got lost. I think it was on a VHS. So you know how long that's outdated that is. And we just hadn't updated it on a DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we're moving and changing our names and we're doing a corporate re-imaging, we wouldn't want to use it anyway.
Yeah.
So basically, that's how we do. We take them over, we bring them in the room, we sit them down, we do a slide presentation about, you know, finance, you know, different reports that we do. So that they get an understanding of how to read reports, particularly financial reports.
Right.
And that's one of the biggest responsibilities they'll ever have is the agency's finances, knowing, you know, whether we are healthy or whether there are some issues.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure they have a good understanding of the financial aspect of it. So the finance committee would meet with the new board member on that.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody has to serve on, most of my board members serve on either two or three committees.
Mm-hmm.
So they get a real deep immersion into the operation of the board. And then they begin to learn how important their responsibility is and that can't be taken lightly. Especially like what we just went through last year. So
Do you do anything special with your community board members? Any training?
Yes. I mean, we have to. Everybody goes through the same, pretty much train. I mean, same pretty much training in terms of what we call orientation to the board. Everybody goes through that. And of course, they have the opportunity to go to different conferences so they can learn more. I think I have three board members who have completed the NAC boot camp, where to become, you know, get their certification as board members. So we've got three board members who've done that. They're going to be offering that, I think, at the PCA annual conference in September. So I have about three board members who are going to go to that and participate in that boot camp training. So, mm-hmm. And these are all my community or consumer board members.
Okay. So, thank you so much.
And that helps when they get an opportunity to travel. I mean, that's, yeah, I mean, they get paid 100% of nothing.
Yeah.
So, we have to have some perks that they can benefit from, even from a learning perspective.
That's great. Allison, will you tell us a little bit more about what you guys do for training of your board members?
Sure, I'd be happy to. We have been working on an ongoing schedule for training and have provided that within the structure of the board meeting to, you know, really highlight key topics. I also mentioned the retreat, which is an opportunity for us to really do some more in-depth training. We have utilized some board training materials, and we often send new board members to NAC board member orientation as a part of the PNI and the CHI. We found that it really gives a comprehensive overview. It's a great resource. Yeah. The other piece that's been really helpful to us is we've created a board binder. And so when new members join the board, they sit with our board chair and our staff member who does a lot of our board liaison work and go through that binder. What do our board reports look like? What does the normal board packet look like? What are you looking for as a board member? And so they really try to orient them to our process, our bylaws, all of those pieces of day-to-day board management and work. And so that's been really helpful to just give folks, you know, kind of a two-hour orientation, getting started piece. We also have, a staff member who's the main liaison for day-to-day questions. Of course, you know, our CEO is always available to board members, but, in terms of questions or needing things resent or clarification, there's another staff member who's really available to board members to help with any questions that they might have.
Yeah. Do you do anything special for your community members or your consumers?
We do. That orientation is particularly important for consumer board members. Mm-hmm. The other thing we've done is we've been offering, starting an hour before the board meeting, for our bilingual members to come early and to, you know, have a chance to go over some key topics, and that's offered in Spanish. We do all of our board meetings with simultaneous translation for our board members who prefer who have English as a second language. So that's been, you know, a real resource for them as well. But again, we invite them and cover the cost for their participation in the NAC orientation as well. So, in some ways, our consumer board members really know the health centers in ways that our non-consumer board members don't. And so their orientation is to board governance issues rather than to our organization. And so we're more intensive on governance things with those folks and more intensive on who we are as an organization for the non-patient board members. So, you know, again, depending on how folks come to us, we really try to orient and develop a training plan that addresses, you know, the areas that they want to focus on in terms of improvement and skill development.
I think that's so important, really individualizing that based upon where they're coming in and what their needs are. That's an excellent, excellent strategy. When you think about retention and retaining those board members, how do you really retain good ones? Is there a secret to it?
You know, we've found that the secret to that for us has been ongoing, really utilizing board members. We found that the board members who find, you know, are not as engaged are the ones who are most likely to find other opportunities, or, you know, who may not stay with us very long. And so it's by finding ways to put, you know, open questions to the board, to secure their participation in events and, you know, in staff events in particular. We have an annual staff event, and, you know, the board really is featured as a part of that. You know, those kinds of things, because the more needed board members feel, the longer they're, the more likely they are to stay, and the more likely that we are to get the best out of them.
And I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
The way you retain board members, I agree with Allison on this, is you have to keep them engaged. If you're not keeping them engaged through committee meetings, phone calls, if necessary, you lose them. And that's how we keep engaged. Another thing that Allison brought up that I have to piggyback on and say we do the same thing, we have a board of directors manual that each new board member gets, and every board member has one. In it is contained the board member conflicts of interest disclosure form, the board member expectations, a board of directors self-assessment tool that they use. And they get the manual also includes the mission statement, vision statement, core values, the policy manual, the bylaws of the organization, all of the directors of the organization, the board member expectation, the conflict of interest, board committees, handbook, the HRSA handbook, our strategic plan, as well as our quality improvement plan. Uh-huh. So every board member has this, and they take it with them, and they bring it to their board meeting, because every time we get new information, they have to update their board manual. So this is how we keep them engaged.
Now, do you do anything special for keeping your community members engaged? And do you retain them at the same length as you retain your non-community members, first of all?
Well, they have different term limits, so when one is going off, another one's coming on. And, like I said, one of the things that we do now, of course, the annual meeting, that's going to be one thing, which is both their learning and a fun experience. But giving them the opportunity to travel to various conferences. That helps, okay? Because you got to remember, when you've got a member who's been, you know, say, formerly homeless, and then all of a sudden they get a chance to go to a hotel, eat, go to conferences, meet people who may have the same interests, and people who may have had the same experiences, and they come back with some great stories. And they come back energized and engaged, even more ready to be engaged. So we try to let them travel to the extent that we can afford it, as often as possible. Okay. So, and we find that has helped. That helps. Like, everybody's looking forward to the state PCA conference, which is going to be in Orange Beach, Alabama. Okay. Down on the beach.
Yeah. So
everybody's looking forward to that. Okay. Sometimes the condos down there are cheaper than the hotels, so most of them are just there in their fully furnished condos. and I see that again as a perk for those board members who may not have the opportunity to travel and to learn more about their responsibilities to networking with other board members. And they come back even more energized as a result.
Absolutely, just the ability to network with other board members outside of their own health center must be a very valuable opportunity.
It is.
Yeah.
And we utilize it as often as we can.
Yeah. So when you think about the roles of your board members, they really have changed so much from, you know, they really have evolved over the last sort of, you know, 20 years or so, where they just sort of we're on the finance committee. Now all of a sudden they're starting to do they're getting more and more involved in sort of the health center and the sometimes even the day-to-day operations. So do your board members do anything that are sort of outside of the norm of the work that they do?
Their role is strictly to make policy.
Mm-hmm.
And to make policy based on the information that they receive from staff. I mean, we have to give them good information in order for them to make good informed decisions.
Yeah.
The one thing that we drill, and I haven't had any issues with this since I'm in CEO, is they're getting involved in the day-to-day operations. Or they're recommending me a friend of a friend who may be just a relative of the board member for employment. We don't do that, and we don't allow the board to, I mean, if you want to send me a recommendation for another board member or a recommendation for somebody for employment, they go through our, you know, through our employment process. Okay, you signed a conflict of interest form, so you know it'd be a conflict to have a relative working for the health center as your
right.
board member. If that happens, somebody has to. We've actually had to have a board member who resigned because we had a relative. A close relative. And another one, we waived the conflict because one of our physician assistants was the either the nephew or the uncle of a board member. And I followed up with Hersha about it, and they said, well, the board has the right to waive that conflict if it so decides. And because the person was such an extra provider, the board waived it. But it's about full disclosure and transparency and not anything that you find out after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So the board knows that, and the board members frown on that. They frown on hiring, you know, anybody who was suggesting that they hire somebody or recommendation that we hire somebody. If the position is open and they're not a relative, or even if they disclose it, that they're distant relative, at least we know what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
It's on the front end as opposed to having to deal with it on the back end. So.
Absolutely.
So we're strictly involved in governing. Setting policy.
So Allison, as you think about the roles of your board members, you know, they've really, the roles of boards for some agencies really have changed so significantly within the last 20 years, or not changed, but sort of evolved in the last 20 years. Do you see that your board members are doing anything different in regard to their operations?
You know, I think that our boards just become more and more sophisticated over time, and so you know, the board members are continuing to be involved in understanding complex issues such as new market tax credit financing and you know, other strategies that the health center has used to help it meet its mission and accomplish its strategic goals. And so, while the overall scope of what our board is involved in, I believe is relatively consistent, the depth and the level of understanding and their commitment to understanding these new elements of managed care contracts and shared savings agreements and you know, new programmatic ways to help implement and achieve, as I said, our goals has really been, I think, the biggest change. So, you know, we've been really fortunate to have board members who are engaged and ask questions and have been willing to work with each other. You know, our treasurer has been exceptional at providing orientation and education to members, you know, who may not come from a financing world on some of these new structures and programs. So, you know, that's been, you know, really wonderful to see, and we were fortunate to have that kind of commitment.
That's perfect. Thank you. So as we move into closing the webinar, we're moving into sort of our summation period. So I'm wondering if What do you think the greatest success of your board has been so far?
For me, the camaraderie that they've developed with each other.
Yeah.
They know each other's strengths, they know each other's weaknesses, and it's not that they become bosom buddies, but they're talking to people who they may not have met before, and they've gotten to know them, and they call each other on a regular basis to discuss certain issues. And we try to make sure that the board members have their board package in their hands at least 1 week prior to the meeting, so that if there's anything they have questions about, they can call me or call my secretary or call one of the staff persons who may be over that particular subject to get the information, you know, to get a better understanding, so that when they come to the board meeting, they read the minutes, they read all the staff reports, they read the committee reports, and they're better prepared as opposed to handing this stuff to them when they arrive to the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to prepare them for board meeting well in advance.
That's very meeting. So Allison, when you think about your board in general, what do you think the greatest success has been so far?
You know, I think the greatest success of our board has been the ability to prioritize and to pay service to both the need to serve more individuals and to address unmet community need, and continue to ensure that everything that we do remains strong and stable. And I think that that kind of balance between the opportunities of growth that are done in a measured and appropriate way to ensure that the base is stable and strong has been, you know, a real hallmark of their success, that they have been open to new communities, open to new needs, open to new priorities, and yet also still focused on ensuring that, you know, our historic and longest served communities are have their needs met, and that we're appropriately deploying resources to accomplish both of those things.
Yes. And what do you think the biggest challenge from a your board's been?
I think the biggest challenge is the transition that we're making now.
Yeah.
They've got a list of 4 to 6 names, recommended names, that they're mulling over. It's for the new name for the Health Center. I guess the biggest challenge is just to keep them engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to keep them engaged. You know, sometimes you end up having to reschedule meetings because, you know, something happened on this and something happened on that end, so it may be 2 weeks in between meetings. But the thing is, they don't forget about the meetings.
Yeah.
We make sure they meet, and we have good records of every committee meeting that's a part of the board package. And just going through this whole phase and this whole change and that we're going through, and I'm sure some will probably be called to testify in the trial, in the upcoming trial, which would be next month, July 6th, if they don't plead out. So.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been an interesting year, to say the least. But at least they have the focus, they know where they're going, and they know where we're trying to grow.
Yeah.
Go and grow. Okay.
So Allison, what do you think about, like, the biggest challenge or the issue that the board sort of struggles with? What do you think that might be?
I think it really is managing so many and supporting, you know, the organization to accomplish so many things that these boards need to, you know, really understand the regulatory environment that comes with being a federally qualified health center. So understanding those 19 standards and making sure that across the organization we're adhering to them at the board level and the staff level and everything in between. But recognizing, you know, that those federal regulations come with just a portion of the revenue that makes our health centers run. And so keeping that going while we are looking at new opportunities and continuing to respond to community needs. And, oh, by the way, you know, our health centers are now 40 years old. And so, you know, we need to be thinking about capital replacement plans and, you know, those kind of strategic plans. And, oh, by the way, you know, we have removing the healthcare environment continues to change. And so we need to be sure that our organization is positioned for that. So I think it is the balance of the regulatory environments that we live in, which are multiple, the strategic positioning, because the healthcare environment is so complicated, and then, you know, the need to respond and remain true to our mission, that to work through the balance across those three areas, I think is the hallmark of an amazing board, and mm-hmm. it's something that takes a lot of effort to be able to do.
Yeah. So, you know, on Monday morning after the football game, it's easy, you know, you sit in your armchair and you think, gosh, you know, you become that sort of Monday morning quarterback. You know, what type of advice would you give a new sort of executive director who's just starting and they're working with the board? And what would you do, and what would you do differently, you think?
Well, I would tell them, number one, you can plan your work, but you'll never plan your day.
Mm.
Always be willing to ask what I call the DSQs, what I call the dumb, stupid questions. People like to say there are no dumb, stupid questions, but yes, they are. I'll give you a good example. You're in a meeting, you're in a room, districts say, are there any questions? Everybody says no, because they don't want to feel like they're stupid by asking stupid questions, so they wait until they get outside of the room and say, what did he mean by this?
Yeah.
That's a dumb, stupid question. So I tell them to ask questions, even if you think you understand it, ask them until you know you understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you have full disclosure. Make sure your minutes are very, very thorough. Not to say you have to write a book, but at least write a summary of what the discussion was, who offered the motion, who seconded the motion. So that's a part of the records. Didn't used to do that before. We mm-hmm. do that now. I would say make sure that you're very open with your staff. And, you know, keep an open door policy. I do. I mean, but I tell my staff, yeah, I have an open door policy, but understand, you may have to wait sometime because they may already have something scheduled, but I will talk to you
mm-hmm.
or see what your concern is. I got people standing outside my door right now. So when you finish, we'd like to talk to you. Okay.
Yeah.
So I would say keep an open mind, but be skeptical at the same time. Don't take every, you know, and you got to sift your information. You got to have a gut feeling about people. Sometimes people look at what people say. I read more body language than verbal language. Body language also often contradicts, and sometimes contradicts what's being said.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to learn how to read those signals and stay abreast of your personal regulations because they're constantly changing. Stay in touch with your staff at all times. I have regular staff meetings with my staff, and I let people, it's not a free fall, but people know that I like my situations and I like my conversations straight. Like I tell them, like I take my liquor, I want it straight, no chasing, give me the facts. And people tend to let people tell them what they want to hear as opposed to what they need to hear, and what they want to know as opposed to what they need to know. I tell them, don't have any yes people around you. You want people going to give you the truth, regardless of how bad that truth may hurt, even if it's about you, even if it's about me. I just made a decision a couple of weeks ago that I thought was a great idea. Steph came back and said, it was a crappy idea. We tried it. I said, well, I'm flexible enough to let y'all go back to doing the way it was working. Okay. They have to learn how not to fix what ain't broke, as opposed to improving and fine-tuning issues. Because some issues, if you just stay out of it, let staff work it, it'll turn out a lot better if you get involved yourself. But there are times when you have to.
Exactly.
So you got to know when and when not to, if that makes any sense.
It makes wonderful sense. Wonderful.
I tell people, I prefer you work it out amongst yourselves and come to. And I tell people, listen, let's not turn, and they always say, one of my favorites say, let's not turn this issue into a science project. I didn't do well in science.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all smart enough people in this room to let's figure it out without turning it into a major science project, because some of the stuff is just simple. And I understand that common sense ain't common.
Yep.
And that's a true statement. Common sense isn't common always. Because if it was, we would have some issue that we have today. But I'm proud of my staff. I'm proud of my board. I'm proud of the team that they've become. And they're continuing to gel. Sometimes you have to go through a bad experience to understand the positive thing that you really, really have. That's where you utilize it.
So, Allison, as you get to give one tip of advice to the new executive director who's working with a board, maybe for the first time, what tip would you give them, you think?
You know, I think it is to really spend the time with board members to understand their strengths and their passions. Because if you can tap into those things, which don't always end up in the same field, you know, some folks are really strong in one area but also really passionate about another. But the ability to tap into both of those pieces are so helpful, because I think one of the struggles of a board is feeling, you know, seeing the value of their contribution. And so the more that we feel the more that I think board members feel engaged and needed and critical, which they are, to the success of the organization, and the more we tap into their tremendous resources, then you know, the ability, the exponential support that that provides is really tremendous. You know, and I think so understanding that and communicating and keeping those lines of communication open with those board members from that initial meeting forward are sort of, that would be my key piece of advice about keeping a board strong and engaged.
Well, on that note, Jimmy, Allison and Jimmy, you both were so wonderful. We're so incredibly grateful. On behalf of the National Center for Health and Public Housing, I want to thank you both so much for participating in today's webinar. Thank you again.
Thank you.